नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we are not going to read from the book Srimad Bhagavatam, but we are going to discuss Person Bhagavata today. It's a very auspicious occasion. It's the appearance day of Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So we'll discuss a little bit about his life today, life and teachings. So that's why we've written down his Pranati Mantra on the board. So we'll all chant together Pranati Mantra of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. Namo Bhakti Vinodaya.
Namo Bhakti
Sachidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupa Nugavarayate Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sachidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanugavarayate Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sachidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate.
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya.
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya.
Sachidananda Namine.
Gaura Shakti Swarupaya.
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya
Sachidananda Namine
Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanugavarayate
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya
Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate
Vaishnavis
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya
Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sachidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate Namo Bhakti Vinodaya Sachidananda Namine Gaura Shakti Swarupaya Rupanuga Varayate
I offer my respectful obeisances. We'll call and repeat his the translation of his Pranati Mantra. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sachidananda Bhakti Vinoda, who is the transcendental energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis, headed by Srila Rupa Goswami. Once again, I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sachidananda Bhakti Vinoda, who is transcendental energy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is a strict follower of the Goswamis, headed by Srila Rupa Goswami.
Om Ajnanatimirandhasya
ಜ್ಞಾನಂಜನಾಶಲಾಕಯ ಚಕ್ಷುರುನ್ಮಿಲಿತಂ ಯೇನ ತಸ್ಮೈ ಶ್ರೀ ಗುರವೇ ನಮಃ. ಶ್ರೀ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಮನೋಭೀಷ್ಟಂ ಸ್ಥಾಪಿತಂ ಯೇನ ಭೂತಲೇ ಸ್ವಯಂ ರೂಪ ಕದಾ ಮಹಿಯಂ ದದಾತಿ ಸ್ವಪದಾಂತಿಕಂ ಮುಖಂ ಕರೋತಿ ವಾಚಾಲಂ ಪಂಗುಂ ಲಂಗಯತೆ ಗಿರಿಂ ಯತ್ಕೃಪಾತಮಹಂ ವಂದೇ ಶ್ರೀಗುರು ದೀನತಾರಿಣಂ ವಾಂಛಾಕಲ್ಪತರುಭ್ಯಶ್ಚ ಕೃಪಾಸಿಂಧೂಭ್ಯ ಏವ ಚ ಪತಿತಾನಾಂ ಪಾವನೇಭ್ಯೋ ವೈಷ್ಣವೇಭ್ಯೋ ನಮೋ ನಮಃ. ಜಯ ಶ್ರೀ ಕೃಷ್ಣ ಚೈತನ್ಯ ಪ್ರಭು ನಿತ್ಯಾನಂದ ಶ್ರೀ ಅದ್ವೈತ ಗದಾಧರ ಶ್ರೀವಾಸಾದಿ ಗೌರಭಕ್ತವೃಂದ. ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ರಾಮ 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 ಹರೇ ಹರೇ, ಹರೇ ಕೃಷ್ಣ. ಸೊ ವಿಲ್ ಸ್ಪೆಂಡ್ ಸಮ್ ಟೈಮ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕಸಿಂಗ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ದ ಲೈಫ್ ಆಫ್ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವಿನೋದ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್. ಭಕ್ತಿ ವಿನೋದ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ ವಾಸ್ ದಿ ಪರಮ್ ಗುರು ಆಫ್ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್. ಸೊ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್ ಗುರು ಮಹಾರಾಜ್ ವಾಸ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಠಾಕೂರ್, ಆಸ್ ಮೋಸ್ಟ್ ಆಫ್ ಅಸ್ ನೋ, ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಫಾದರ್ ಆ್ಯಂಡ್ ಶಿಕ್ಷಾ ಗುರು ವಾಸ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವಿನೋದ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್. ಸೊ ಭಕ್ತಿ ಸಿದ್ಧಾಂತ ಸರಸ್ವತಿ ಠಾಕೂರ್, ಹೂ ಇಸ್ ದ ಗುರು ಆಫ್ ಶ್ರೀಲ ಪ್ರಭುಪಾದ್, ಹೀ ಆ್ಯಕ್ಚುಲಿ ಗಿವ್ಸ್ ಅಸ್ ಅ ವಾರ್ನಿಂಗ್. ಹೀ ಸೇಸ್ ದಟ್ ಡೂ ನಾಟ್ ಜಡ್ಜ್ ಭಕ್ತಿ ವಿನೋದ್ ಠಾಕೂರ್ಸ್ ಲೈಫ್, ಲೈಕ್ ವಿಲ್ ಬಿ ಟಾಕಿಂಗ್ ಅಬೌಟ್ ಹಿಸ್ ಲೈಫ್ ಸೂನ್. But he says that do not judge his life based on some of the activities that he was doing early on in his life. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives this warning about four other personalities as well. And he says that, for example, the life of Ramanand Rai. So he says that one should never judge the life of Ramanand Rai. And this is a warning even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had given. So externally, Ramanand Rai appeared to be preparing girls for young dramas and all those things. And somebody who can be watching from the external and who doesn't know the life of Ramanand Rai, he can easily mistake him. But obviously, he's a transcendental and eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur warns us about Ramanand Rai. He also warns us that we should not judge the life of Mukunda Datta, who was a physician during Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's times. So even though externally he might appear that, you know, he is doing some mundane activities of leading the life of a physician and prescribing medicines to cure the body, but once again he was also an eternal associate of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And during one pastime, he was actually the personal physician of the king at that time. And the king, you know how kings always are very living opulently. So one of the king's servants was fanning him with a peacock fan. And just to speak about Mukunda's exalted and elevated consciousness, so as soon as he saw the peacock fan, he fainted because it reminded him of Lord Krishna. And the king was, he was a Muslim king, but he was also very, he was a spiritual person. So he realized that this is something which is not, you know, because Mukunda tried to cover up saying that, no, I have a disease and because of that I fell down, that is because of that I fainted. But the king was spiritual and he realized that, no, this was some ecstasy that he had felt because of whatever reason, some external. So this was the elevated consciousness of Mukunda as well. The third personality whom Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur warns about is Arjuna. He says that do not, you know, think that Arjuna got bewildered and therefore, you know, he had fallen down and he was like a conditioned soul who, like all of us in the material world, who also get bewildered because of some overwhelming situations. Like Arjuna was in an overwhelming situation on the battlefield of Kurukshetra and therefore he got bewildered. So we shouldn't compare Arjuna with a mundane personality in the material world who would get bewildered like a conditioned soul. Arjuna is obviously still an eternal associate of Lord Krishna. And that was a pastime. We've heard that many times, but that was a pastime so that the Bhagavad Gita could be spoken. And the fourth personality whom Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur warns about is Pundarik Vidyanidhi. So Pundarik Vidyanidhi was externally, it appeared as if he was carried in a palanquin. Very royally he used to live. Even when he used to be, like he would sit down, they would lay down very beautiful white, soft silk mattresses for him. And he would be smoking a hookah and all that. So when Gadadhar Pandit was brought to have a look, you know, to have darshan of Pundarik Vidyanidhi and possibly take initiation from him, Gadadhar Pandit, because he was a simple brahmachari, So he also was, you know, for first few seconds, he was also bewildered that, you know, is this how Pundarik Vidyanidhi is? Like, is this the person who is such an exalted personality, like people are saying? But just at that time, someone recited the Gopi Gita, I think, and Pundarik Vidyanidhi completely went into a trance. Or one of the verses from Bhagavatam, and he started tearing his own clothes out, and he just went into ecstasy hearing these verses from the Bhagavatam. So that was once again the elevated consciousness of Pundarik Vidyanidhi. And I believe he's eternally actually King Vrishabhanu in Krishna Leela. But externally we might see these personalities enacting some pastimes, which if we don't hear from authorized sources about their life, we actually can have the chance of misjudging these personalities. And in the same light, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur warns about his own father. He says, do not judge my father's life from a mundane or an external vision, because that can actually make us do some aparad if we, you know, misunderstand the life of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur was born in 1838, and he was born in a very opulent family in a place called Bir Nagar, which is present-day Ulagram, it's called. It's in Nadia or West Bengal. And he was the seventh son of a person called Raja Krishnananda Datta. So his father was a great devotee of Lord Nityananda. And during Bhakti Vinod Thakur's time, jumping a little bit ahead, there was a personality called Shishir Kumar Ghosh. And Shishir Kumar Ghosh, he was never a very staunch practicing devotee, but he was very favorable to devotees, to Vaishnavism. And he was actually the head, or he used to own the business of publishing newspapers and magazines. So it was called as Amrita Bazar Patrika. And during those times, when Bhakti Vinod Thakur was there and Shishir Kumar Ghosh was there, that was one of the largest circulating newspaper of Bengal, or even of the country, it was said. So he was a very rich man, opulent person, owner of such a big patrika. And he was a close associate of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. In fact, he used to, because Bhakti Vinod Thakur was very proficient in English language, even at that time in the 1830s and all, he was very proficient in English language. So he used to actually engage Bhakti Vinod Thakur in editing some of his articles from the magazines or the newspapers. But Shishir Kumar Ghosh, even though he wasn't a practicing devotee, just observing the life and the integrity and dedication of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he had actually named him. He said, I have not seen the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. He knew about the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. But he said, I have never seen them. But looking at the life of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, I can actually see that he is the seventh Goswami. So the title seventh Goswami was given to Bhakti Vinod Thakur by Shishir Kumar Ghosh. And Shishir Kumar Ghosh's grandson was actually present during Prabhupada's time. So he was the chief minister of Bengal, of West Bengal during Prabhupada's time. And he actually enabled, or he helped us. He was very closely associated, a close friend of Prabhupada. And Prabhupada used his help in actually securing the land of Mayapur. So this is how that family has always closely helped, and Vaishnavas and especially ISKCON and Prabhupada and Bhakti Vinod Thakur. So that is the background why Bhakti Vinod Thakur was given the title Seventh Goswami. And there's a book also which has been published on the life of Bhakti Vinod Thakur called The Seventh Goswami. So he was born in opulent surroundings, and he was born to a father who was devoted to Lord Nityananda. So just to speak of his opulence, in his childhood, all of the brothers, Bhakti Vinod Thakur and all of his brothers, had pet elephants. That was the, you know, people have pet dogs and cats, but they had pet elephants. And to maintain one elephant, it requires so much Lakshmi, it is said, because elephants obviously consume large quantities of food and they need large, you know, vast tracts of land. So he was born in very rich and opulent surroundings, and his whole childhood was spent like that. And it is said that his early introduction to spirituality or to religious teachings was through the gatekeeper or through the security guard who used to be guarding the estate which Bhakti Vinod Thakur was born in. So that security guard was an ex-dacoit, actually. Like, you know, Chanakya Pandit says, wherever you get good teachings from or a good guru, you should not see where he has come from. You should accept that person. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur used to spend hours with this security guard of his estate. And he used to not only tell him about all his, you know, previous years as a dacoit, but he used to tell him lots of stories about Mahabharata, Ramayana, and all these early teachings Bhakti Vinod Thakur got from his security guard. So if we study Bhakti Vinod Thakur's life, and we will see as we go on, that his life was one tragedy after another, especially in the early days, in the early years of his manifest life. So many difficulties he had to go through. But Prabhupada says, Prabhupada has written about him and he has mentioned in a lecture as well, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur could only sustain through all of this, mainly because of his sincerity and dedication. So Prabhupada was writing in the same light that anyone who just stays sincere on the path of Krishna consciousness and who dedicates their time and their effort and Lakshmi in, you know, practicing as well as preaching Krishna consciousness, that person is always safe, no matter what tragedies or what difficult situations that person goes through. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur's childhood name was Kedarnath Datta. And his childhood was spent at the mansion of his maternal grandfather, who was very opulent. And that was a place called Bir Nagar. And his elementary education, when he was 7 years old, he was admitted into an elementary primary school, which was a Christian school, because the British rule was already going on at that time. So he was admitted in that school, and even the teachers were amazed to look at how quickly he became proficient in the English language, how quickly he started mastering the English language. So that is how Bhaktivinoda Thakur was, very good in Bengali, Sanskrit, English. And later on in his life, he also learned Persian and Urdu. He had mastered these languages also. So it is said sometimes that a person who has high intelligence can become multilinguistic. Otherwise, it's very hard to pick up languages for a person, especially when they become older. But Persian and Urdu, he picked up very later on in his life. But once again, he was very proficient at those languages. So when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was around 8 years old, that is when, you know, one tragedy after the other started coming in his life. So when he was 8, he lost 2 of his brothers to some disease. There was a disease which struck his family, and he lost 2 of his brothers, one after the other in that year. And obviously his mother became very possessive about Bhaktivinoda Thakur because he was the surviving son, and she did not want to lose one more son. But in the same year, after a few months, he also lost his father, once again, to a disease. So that way, you know, it was one tragedy after the other. And this actually made, it opened Bhaktivinoda Thakur's heart and mind to asking different questions, that what's the purpose of life? Why are these things happening to me? That's when that little bit awakening started happening for Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when all these tragedies were going on. And then in 1850, at the age of 12, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's mother arranged for his marriage. Obviously, in the earlier days, people used to get married at a very early age. So his mother arranged for his marriage to a girl who was 5 years old. And his name, that was his first wife. And her name was Shayamani. So that was his first wife which Bhaktivinoda Thakur married. And because his father had passed away, Bhaktivinoda Thakur started living with his uncle, whose name was Kashi Prasad Ghosh. And again, the family had this, you know, language proficiency. So his uncle had also mastered English under the British education, and he started homeschooling Bhaktivinoda Thakur for some time. And Bhaktivinoda Thakur slowly, because he had mastered English language, when he was 18 or 19 years old, which was in the year 1856-57, he entered the college in Calcutta. He traveled to Calcutta and he started studying over there. And because of his proficiency in English language, he was dabbling with a few things at that time in life. So he was also dabbling with Christianity, like Christian theology. He used to do a lot of comparative study of Christianity, Islam, all these different religions. So he was trying to do studies, but he was also very interested in historical things. So he wrote a 30-volume manuscript on the life of Porus. Not sure if many of you are aware about Porus, but Porus was the one who fought with Alexander the Great. So when I was young in India, we used to study about Porus, the fight between Porus and Alexander the Great. So he wrote 30-volume book on the life of Porus. So when we think about it, it seems a bit surprising why Bhaktivinoda Thakur would write about him. But at that time, he was very interested in the history of India. And he also wrote a 15 or 16-volume manuscript on the pastimes or the stories of Vikram and Vetal. Now again, you know, people who are from India will relate to this. Like, we have grown up watching serials of Vikram and Vetal, and we've also read lots of comic books about Vikram and Vetal. They are two fictional characters who are there, and, you know, Vetal is like a ghost who used to climb on. Vikram was a king, and he used to climb on his shoulders, and he used to ask him very philosophical questions. And if King Vikram would answer those questions, he would release him. Otherwise, the next day he would again, you know, some stories like that. but that had nothing to do with spirituality. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur had written 15 or 16 volume manuscript, even on the stories of Vikram and Vetal. And he used to spend hours, apart from this, he used to spend hours studying the lives and teachings of Christian reformers. Like I said, in his early life, he was dabbling with different things. And also at that time in the British Indian Society, he gave a lecture on the evolution of matter. After studying the Christian philosophy, he started giving lectures on that. And then early adulthood. So in 1858, when he was 20 years old, he returned to Nadia. And early, like, you know, once he, just moving back a few years, when he had got married, when he was 12 years old and his mother got him married to Shayamani, soon after that, he actually contracted a very deadly disease, like something like blood dysentery, and he used to get severe itching in his skin, which was not going away only. So then there was a local doctor who was like a fakir. You know, when we say fakir means those Muslim mendicants who can even cure people. So his mother actually contacted this Muslim fakir, and his name was Fakir Goloka. So he was called to actually cure Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And his medicines worked. He, you know, brought some herbs and some mantra tantras, everything, and he cured Bhakti Vinod Thakur. But that time he made two predictions, this Fakir Goloka. He said that very soon your whole village will be wiped out because of cholera. There will be an epidemic of cholera and your whole village will be wiped out. That was one prediction he made. And he said that the second prediction is that you will become a great Vaishnava philosopher and a scholar. And that will start, you will start manifesting that somewhere around the age of 27, 28. So these are the two predictions this Fakir Goloka made about Bhakti Vinod Thakur, about Kedarnath Datta when he was curing him. So coming back to his early adulthood, so Bhakti Vinod Thakur, when he was in the age of 20, he actually returned to his native gram, which was Kulia Gram. He went there and he saw that that prediction had come true. Most of his village was wiped out because there was an epidemic of cholera. And the only two surviving members of his family was his mother and his maternal grandmother. So he just brought both of them with him and he brought them to Calcutta back. So acting, and that time his grandfather was also going to pass away. And his grandfather had told him that you please go to Orissa and visit all the holy temples and places of Orissa, and then you should write a book on that. So acting on the last wishes of his grandfather, from Nadia he came back to Calcutta and then he went to Orissa. And this was approximately at the age of 20 that Bhakti Vinod Thakur did that. And very soon, you know, again keeping up the wishes of his maternal grandfather, he wrote that book on the temples and holy places of Orissa. That is one of the teachings or books that he wrote. And then he began to consider, obviously he was already 20 years old, so he began to consider the question of his livelihood. That how I should sustain myself. Because he had dabbled with a few jobs by then, but you know, every few months he had to keep changing his job because of some reason or the other. So he started as a grade 2 school teacher, but you know, the job didn't work out for him. So then he started working at a sugar factory, at a sugar mill of one of his friends. One of his friends recommended him and he started working at a sugar factory. And one day one of the customers had come, and while he was, you know, doing some transaction, the customer had given some extra money. So, and then the customer walked away. He, by mistake, he gave some extra money. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur called him back. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur told him, look, you've given this extra money, take this extra money back. And the owner of that shop, he actually drove Bhakti Vinod Thakur out. He said, this is not the way you do business, where you're calling someone back and giving back their money. So he lost that job. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur was then contemplating, what should I do? Should I go back to teaching? Because any other business, there is some dishonesty, which Bhakti Vinod Thakur did not want to live with. So he actually started considering, and he became a school teacher at that time. And he later on became the headmaster of the school, because obviously his mastery in English language, Bengali, Sanskrit, and because of his intelligence, he was very quickly promoted. And then in 1860, at the age of 22, his first son, Achyutananda, was born. But unfortunately, his wife died. Just after childbirth, his wife died. She contracted some disease during childbirth and his wife died. And because the baby was so small, Bhakti Vinod Thakur had to remarry, because who will look after the baby? So then he married a girl called Bhagavati. And Bhagavati Devi then stayed Bhakti Vinod Thakur's life till Bhakti Vinod Thakur left this planet, or till she left the planet. But she was his wife for his whole life after that. So, and during that time, it is written that he also published a book in English that described all the ashramas and temples of the state of Orissa. And it was a very important turning point. So when he was writing this book about the temples and holy places of Orissa, obviously, because there is Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is so well integrated with Puri, he started reading about the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he realized that the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu have been very misrepresented. Like, people don't know the exact philosophy, and there was so much Sahajyaism in the name of, you know, spreading Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. And he realized people were completely misguided, and the pristine teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were lost. So that was a big turning point in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life, somewhere around the age of 22, when he started doing a lot of research in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings and his life and philosophy. So in 1861, at the age of 23... after he was promoted to headmaster, he accepted the post of deputy magistrate in the government of Bengal. And after seeing corruption, he's, you know, deputy magistrate, that too in government, he saw there was a lot of corruption that was going on. He became collectorate officer because he wanted to set right whatever corruption was going on. And amidst all this, amidst all these government duties, he still continued writing and publishing literatures and his own study of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's books. And then at the age of 28, he became the deputy collector and deputy magistrate. And he used his government position to successfully settle disputes. There were a lot of disputes which were happening between the government and farmers and all that. And he was very pro to the farmers. He was trying to, you know, help the farmers out. So he would successfully settle all these disputes. And as I said, it was during this time that he became very proficient in Persian and Urdu. And then at the age of 30, he became the deputy magistrate of West Bengal, which was the highest rank in the government which any Indian could be given under the British rule. So looking at Bhaktivinoda Thakur's qualities, this is the position that he was given, mainly because of his fast, like he was extremely efficient in his work. So he was given that position. And he used to continuously read Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita to establish the right teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And he began incessantly submitting heartfelt prayers for the Lord's mercy because he saw that there was so much misrepresentation of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. And very soon, at the age of 31, he delivered a speech on Srimad Bhagavatam. Again, in the British India Society, he delivered this speech because he wanted to start spreading slowly the teachings of Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita. So during that time, he was transferred to a place called Champaran. And I think it's somewhere in the border of Gujarat or Rajasthan. Bihar. Okay. So he was transferred to Champaran. And that time his second son, Radhika Prasad, was born. And when he was posted in Champaran, he came to know of a very strange incident that was happening in that village. So there was a Brahma Daitya. A Brahma Daitya is like a ghost, a possessed ghost who was there. And there were some dacoits in Champaran. And this Brahma Daitya and the dacoits had become very good friends. So the dacoits were using the Brahma Daitya's powers to loot people, and then whichever person would go and try to complain to the magistrate or to the police, they would release this Brahma Daitya on that person. So everyone was scared. Imagine if a ghost is coming behind you to punish you or something. So everyone was scared to lodge complaints about these dacoits. But people were really getting fed up. So this case came to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's light. So he realized that this ghost was living in a banyan tree. And he himself did for some time and then he advised another devotee who was there in Champaran at that time that every evening you sit in under this banyan tree and read Srimad Bhagavatam continuously. So this was again part of his mission of establishing Srimad Bhagavatam and Chaitanya Charitamrita in the world. So he made this scholar and this devotee sit under the tree, and every day this devotee would recite Srimad Bhagavatam. For hours and hours he would recite Srimad Bhagavatam. And it is said that at the end of 1 month of continuously reciting Srimad Bhagavatam, that whole banyan tree crashed and that Brahma Daitya got liberation just because of hearing Srimad Bhagavatam for so long. And this incident actually renewed people's faith in Srimad Bhagavatam. When, you know, the villagers who were so harassed by this Brahma Daitya, they saw that he was released from this ghostly body just because of Srimad Bhagavatam. That renewed their faith and it made them accept Srimad Bhagavatam wholeheartedly. And then in 1873, at the age of 35, he moved back near the... he was transferred back to Orissa. And over there, when he was transferred back to Orissa, the famous pastime of Bishak Sen happened. So not sure if many of you are aware or people have seen Prabhupada, you know, the series which has been made on Prabhupada by Bhakti Charu Maharaj. In that series also this episode is there. But there was a personality called Bishak Sen. And this Bishak Sen was actually a tantric and a mystic yogi. So he certainly had mystic powers because he must have done some yoga and all that. So he certainly had mystic powers, but absolutely misusing those mystic powers. And he had two assistants, and one assistant he called as Brahma and one he called as Shiva. And he claimed that he himself was Mahavishnu. So this is how, you know, he was trying to misguide the people of Orissa at that time. So, but people were, throngs and throngs of people were getting enamored by his teachings and his false, some of these mystic siddhis which he could create fire from his hair and all that. So, people were getting very enamored by this outward show of mystic siddhis. And throngs of people were going to his ashram. But very soon, you know, it was being realized, like Bhakti Vinod Thakur and the true Vaishnavas could see that he was doing, you know, womanizing in the name of, you know, calling people and Ras Leela and all those things. So he wasn't utilizing his powers very appropriately, which is the case with all these mystic people. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur went to speak to him. And what he had also claimed at that time when he was there, Bishak Sen, that he has the capability of driving the Britishers out of India sole-handedly. Like alone he can drive the Britishers out of India. And after that he should be made the king of India. So this is what he was telling people. And obviously the Britishers got a bit worried that he's, you know, spreading this message among all these throngs of people who are coming. That I can drive the Britishers out and all. So they wanted to arrest him. And there was a person called Mr. Ravenshaw, who was the district commissioner at that time in Orissa. So he requested Kedarnath Datta, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, to come and settle this matter for him. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur was the magistrate at that time. So he came and he actually first had a conversation with Bishak Sen. And he saw Bishak Sen started displaying all his mystic powers. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur actually gave credence to the fact. He recognized that, yes, you are a mystic yogi, but why don't you use your mystic yogic siddhis in the right way? So he invited him. He said, why don't you come and have darshan of the Lord Jagannath in the Puri temple? And that will help you again gain a good insight on who is actually the real Lord Vishnu. But immediately Bishak Sen, because he was so puffed up with pride because of his mystic powers, he told Bhakti Vinod Thakur that why should I come to take his darshan? He is only a hunk of wood, whereas I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Obviously, if Bhakti Vinod Thakur, who's a pure devotee of the Lord, when he heard this, then he became very furious. Before that, he was trying to negotiate with Bishak Sen to, you know, make him see some logic and some sense and transform him into a Vaishnava. But when Bishak Sen derogatory comments about Jagannath, Lord Jagannath, he became very furious. So the next day, he brought a police force, a task force of 100 policemen to arrest him. And he said, throw him in jail. Now people were very scared and his followers started protesting. Obviously he had throngs of followers. So they started protesting. And Bishak Sen warned Bhakti Vinod Thakur that because of my mystic powers, I'm going to use them on you because you're doing this to me and I'll ensure that your family is destroyed. So actually it happened. When the trial started, very soon Bhakti Vinod Thakur's daughter, she caught a very deadly disease and she was having high fever, which was not going away at all. And soon after that, on the 18th day of the trial, like the trial went for 18 days. And on the 18th day, when the judgment had to be announced by Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he also himself contracted the same disease as his daughter. Very high fever, which was not going away at all. So he could realize that, yes, Bishak Sen is doing all these things. He's using his siddhis and his tantric mantric powers on me to, you know, dissuade me from arresting him or, you know, passing a judgment on him or convicting him. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur said that that's okay if my family has to die or I have to die, but this rascal has to be taught a lesson. So on the 18th day, Bhakti Vinod Thakur, even in that condition, actually went to the court and he passed the judgment and he said that he should be charged and he should be thrown in jail. So when he was being carried to jail, outside there were protests. Imagine, you know, in the public courthouse, he is being carried to jail and outside people are protesting, all his followers, release him, release him. But while he was trying to carry to jail, one of the medical officers over there, he had heard that usually these tantrics and these mystic siddhis, they hold all their power in their hair. And Bishak Sen also had like lots of hair on his head. So this medical officer quickly cut off all his hair. And as soon as the hair was cut off, Bishak Singh just fell down powerless, almost as if he had died. So he had to be carried in a stretcher to the jail. And in 3 months, it is said that Bishak Singh committed suicide. He drank poison and he committed suicide because all his powers were gone. But this shows how Bhakti Vinod Thakur was so courageous, even in the face of adversities. Now, if, you know, we think he's an exalted personality and he can do this, but if we put ourselves in the same shoes as Bhakti Vinod Thakur, if our family is threatened or something like that, or we see our children almost on deathbed, I'm sure any of us would want to give up the case and not pursue it further. But Bhakti Vinod Thakur was so courageous and so much integrity he had to establish the right Siddhanta that he wasn't afraid. If anybody gets, you know, whatever happens to us, this person has to be set right and the right example has to be set in society. And then later on in his life, speaking of a few years later on, between 1874 and 1893, that is when Bhakti Vinod Thakur was between the age of 36 and 55, he, because he was reading so much on Chaitanya Charitamrita, also Srimad Bhagavatam, he started going a little bit in seclusion. And he started reading and he started chanting the holy names, like incessantly he would chant in seclusion. He wanted to little bit take a step back from worldly duties. So during this time, it is said, when he, you know, intensified his sadhana and his chanting, he wrote several books in Sanskrit and in Bengali, which included Krishna Samhita, that is one of a very famous book of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. He also wrote Tattva Sutram, Tattva Viveka, and also Kalyana Kalpaturu, which many of us know about. And he also wrote the Jaiva Dharma, which is a book which even Prabhupada used to refer to a lot. And while in Puri, he established a Vaishnava discussion society called the Bhagwat Satsat in the Jagannath Vallabha Gardens. Many of us who have visited Puri have seen that. All prominent Vaishnavas at that time used to join him. They used to have nice discourses on Bhagavatam. But there was one Vaishnava, or rather he was a scholar, who wouldn't accept Bhakti Vinod Thakur's authority on Srimad Bhagavatam. And again, what we spoke at the beginning of the lecture, he was going by externals. He was judging Bhakti Vinod Thakur on the externals. And he said that, oh, he's a magistrate. He doesn't wear kanti mala and tilak. So how can we accept him? And he was also instigating others. So Bhakti Vinod Thakur formed this nice society where they used to have discussions on Bhagavatam. But he used to instigate other Vaishnavas also, that don't go there. We don't know whether he's authorized. He doesn't even appear like a Vaishnava. So just going by the externals. But very soon this Vaishnava scholar actually contracted a disease. And at night, Lord Jagannath came in his dreams. And Lord Jagannath told him that you are actually doing an aparadh against a great devotee, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. He is my great devotee. So you go and fall at his feet, beg for his mercy, and he will give you some medicine which will cure you from this disease. So the next day, this Vaishnava scholar realized his mistake and he begged for forgiveness from Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And Bhakti Vinod Thakur actually gave him some medications which helped him cure out from his disease. And very soon, Bhakti Vinod Thakur Bey was made the manager of the temple, of Jagannath Puri temple. So he used all the government powers to regulate the deity worship and, you know, all the pandas who were there. He brought about some organization and some structure and some systems. And he ensured everyone followed the proper processes in the temple. So he would himself, like we said, he had established this Bhagavad Samhita society. He himself would spend a lot of time and hours discussing katha and chanting the holy name, especially at Tota Gopinath temple. So he had started intensifying his sadhana. So he would sit at the Tota Gopinath temple, at the Siddha Bakul tree, Haridas Thakur's samadhi. He would sit at these places and for hours and hours he would chant the holy name. And once his sadhana had started becoming, you know, very, we say, paripakva, he was intensifying all his sadhana. During that time in 1874, he used to live in a house which was on the Grant Road, that GT Road or something which is called, where the Jagannath Rath Yatra happens. So at that time he started praying because he was so intent on establishing the right teaching, especially of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he started praying to the Lord. And he said that, oh my Lord, you please send me a son, a ray of Vishnu, who will help me in establishing the right Siddhanta of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. So continuously he was praying like that. And then his fourth son was born, who was none other than Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was born in Jagannath Puri, in that house near Jagannath Vallabha Gardens, where Bhakti Vinod Thakur used to live at that time. And there's a very famous pastime when Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was 6 months old, and the Jagannath Rath Yatra procession had happened at that time, on that day, and it had stopped. For 3 days, it had stopped outside Bhakti Vinod Thakur's house. And the cart was refusing to move completely. So Bhagavati Devi, who was the wife of Bhakti Vinod Thakur, she took this opportunity and she thought, it's such a nice way, let me take my child. And because the cart is anyway not moving, let me take my child on the cart and put him at the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath. And they also had to do his Annaprashana ceremony, the grains giving ceremony. So she thought, it's a nice way to, you know, do the Annaprashana ceremony on the cart itself. So she took Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, she and Bhakti Vinod Thakur took Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur on the cart. And as soon as they placed him at the lotus feet of Lord Jagannath, one of the garlands of Lord Jagannath fell on Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was 6 months old at that time. And very happily, Bhakti Vinod Thakur and his wife did the grain ceremony also on the cart itself. So that is how, you know, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur came in this world, mainly because of the intense prayers of Bhakti Vinod Thakur to send a ray of Vishnu to assist him. So one day when, you know, Bhakti Vinod Thakur was in charge of the Jagannath Puri temple, he was made the manager, he saw that the king of Puri had misappropriated 80,000 rupees. Now imagine at that time, you know, in the 1860s and 70s, if someone appropriates 80,000 rupees is a big amount even still. So at that time, the king of Puri had misappropriated 80,000 rupees. So he made a mandate. He told the king, because he was the manager, he could pass that mandate. He told the king that every day you should offer 52 times, you should offer meals to Lord Jagannath, just as a retribution, like, you know, as a repentance, you should do this because you misappropriated Lord Jagannath's funds. So for some time they did that, and obviously they started running out of money, because where will the money come to sustain 52 offerings? So the king got very upset that Bhakti Vinod Thakur had passed this judgment. So the king actually got some tantric ritualists people, and they started organizing a 30-day tantric ritual sacrifice. And at the end of that 30th day, the purpose of the sacrifice, which the king told all the tantrics, was that Bhakti Vinod Thakur should die. So the whole purpose of that sacrifice was to kill Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And on that, so they kept doing the sacrifice, but Bhakti Vinod Thakur was not concerned at all. He was just praying to Lord Jagannath, and he knew he had done the right thing. So on the 30th day, when the final oblations were done by those tantrics in the sacrifice, the king's own son died. So it is said, you know, when people try to do some black magic or these tantric things, it can actually, if they are not experts, which normally people are not in Kali Yuga, it usually harms their own family members. It can harm them or their own family members. And that is what happened in this king's case as well. So in 1878, when Bhakti Vinod Thakur was 40 years old, he returned to Bengal near Navadweep, in Shantipur. And here he wrote two famous books. He wrote the Krishna Samhita and the Kalyan. He got them published. He had started writing them in Puri, but he got them published when he moved over here. And around that time, when he was approximately 40 years old, Bhakti Vinod Thakur took Diksha initiation from Vipin Bihari Goswami. So that was his Diksha Guru. He took initiation from him, who had descended from the family of Janava Mata. So Bipin Bihari Goswami was the Diksha Guru of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And then in 1881, when he was 43 years old, he started publishing that famous magazine or a weekly magazine called Sajjana Toshani, which was his own Vaishnava journal. And he desired to actually gain the land of Raja. He wanted to go and see the land of Raja. 3 months for this purpose, where he went there as well for 3 months. And over there, for the first time, he met Srila Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. So he was so inspired by Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj that he decided to accept him as his eternal Shiksha Guru. So even though his Diksha Guru was Bipin Bihari Goswami, we don't see Bipin Bihari Goswami's photo when we see the Guru Parampara. We actually see Jagannath Das Babaji's photo after Bhakti Vinod Thakur, because most of his spiritual life was nourished by Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. So he accepted him as his Siksha Guru. And then later on, he, you know, again authored so many books. He also wrote the Chaitanya Shikshamrita, the Chaitanya Charanamrita. And also in Calcutta, he started the Vishwa Vaishnav Sabha, which was dedicated to preaching the pure bhakti of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And it was at that time, you know, all the Bengali Vaishnavas, they recognized his exalted position because he was writing so many books, publishing so many articles and giving lectures and talks on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pure teachings that they gave him the honorary title. So these were the Bengali Vaishnavas who gave him the honorary title of Bhakti Vinod Thakur. And that title was not given by his guru, but it was given by all the Vaishnavas at that time. And also in 1874, when he was almost 49 years old, Bhakti Vinod Thakur actually decided that now I want to quit government services and I want to now start working on my own sadhana and, you know, intensifying my own reading, hearing and chanting. So he almost had resolved to quit government service, but at that time he got a dream. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke personally to Bhakti Vinod Thakur in that dream. And he told him that you will certainly go to retire and you will certainly go to Vrindavan. Bhakti Vinod Thakur wanted to settle down in Vrindavan. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu assured him that yes, definitely you will do that, but now is not the time. Right now I still have one more mission for you. I want you to discover my birthplace. So he got that, actually he got that instruction from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself when he was contemplating retiring. So just to fulfill the mission or the dream or the instruction which Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had given him, Bhakti Vinod Thakur secured a transfer to Krishnanagar. Krishnanagar is in Nadia. So he secured a transfer over there near Navadweep. And one night when he was sitting on the rooftop of Rani Dharmashala in Navadweep, he actually saw from the other side of the Ganga, he saw that there was a tal tree and that was giving out very effulgent light. And suddenly he saw a vision over there, like of a beautiful temple, and he saw some Vaishnavas and all that. And he had his servant and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was still a child at that time, both of them were present. And he told them, look, can you see that? There's an effulgent light coming out and there's a nice vision of Vaishnavas which I can see dancing and chanting. And the servant could not see anything, but Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur could see the same vision which Bhakti Vinod Thakur could see. So then Bhakti Vinod Thakur realized that, yes, if my son also saw that, there is some significance to what I'm seeing. You know, this light, this effulgent light coming out. So he actually then, you know, he realized that this is an indication which Lord Chaitanya is giving to me. So he started studying all the old manuscripts. He went to the Krishnanagar library and he, you know, the hundreds and hundreds of year old manuscripts he started studying. He also started going through the maps which were available, old maps which were available of that area. Plus he went on that side where he had seen the light come through and he went and he spoke to all the elderly people over there. And most of them established, told him that yes, this is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So the Ganga had actually changed its course, it is said. In those, you know, 400, 500 years, Ganga had changed its course. And that is why what people were considering as, you know, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace was not actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace during Bhakti Vinod Thakur's time. It was on the other side of Ganga where he saw the light coming out from. So he got the historical data. He also got the data, like the, you know, he validated it with the local Vaishnavas, elderly Vaishnavas who were living there. And there were profusely, Tulsi Maharani was growing in that area where he had seen that light coming from. But he thought that, no, there is one more thing which I have to confirm about this. And that is, only, you know, a great Vaishnava has to also confirm. So obviously he called upon his own Siksha Guru, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, who was almost 120 years old already at that time. So he requested him. He said that, I feel that this is the birthplace of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but can you come and once see and validate what I am thinking? So actually, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, he had a servant who used to carry him in a basket. He couldn't even walk because he was so old. And his eyelids had also closed, like, because of old age, his eyelids had also drooped. So even if he had to see something, his eyelids had to be lifted physically up so that he can see. He was so old and emaciated. But as soon as the servant brought him close to that place, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj jumped out of the basket and he started dancing up and down, like he was jumping up and down with his hands high up in the air. And he was shouting in ecstasy that this is my Gauranga's birthplace, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace. And that was another validation which Bhakti Vinod Thakur wanted. So, you know, historical, local Vaishnavas and Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj. So he did a three-way check and that completely confirmed the fact that yes, this is Lord Chaitanya's birthplace. So then Bhakti Vinod Thakur took upon himself that I have to now build the temple for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu so that right worship is established over here. So it is said that he actually started going, you know, from village to village, house to house. He himself started collecting funds. And just as we have $1 a day, he would tell people, just give 1 rupee. Everybody, you know, if everybody gives one rupee, whoever can give more obviously gives more, but at least minimum give 1 rupee, and that way we will collect all these funds, and your contribution would have gone to actually build Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's birthplace temple. So that is how he was inspiring people to contribute towards that. So he started building that temple. And it is said that he, in the same year, he also renovated the house of Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, which was at Ravi's Ghat. And then he took leave from office. Obviously, he was working still at that time. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had instructed him, don't retire so early. So he took leave from office for 2 years, and he acquired a plot of land at Sri Godruma Dweep. And that is where we see the Swananda Sukhada Kunj, the Surabhi Kunj, where he established his own private quarters, like a retirement house he made. So he made that retirement house so that he can live there. So 2 years he took off from work just to build that house so that he can do his sadhana at the later age. And we know that because he was so efficient in his work, that the Britishers had actually built a train line which used to go from Krishna, like where he used to live in Krishnanagar, to the court. Just can you imagine a dedicated train line going from your house to your workplace so that he could quickly travel and, you know, he could come back, because he wanted to retire, but the Britishers wanted him to keep working. He was such a valued person, even in the eyes of the Britishers. So, and I think that train line, if I'm not wrong, some years ago I saw, I don't know if you've removed that. It's still there, that train line. It's evidence of the fact that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was materially also very much valued by the Britishers. And then it is said that after he had helped build the temple, he also, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is the guru of Namahatta preaching. So he is the one who established this whole Namahatta principle of preaching. And he is the one who said that, you know, little centers should start all over Nadia, where he was living at that time. And one center starts, people start, you know, doing satsang, kirtan together, and then they subdivide, then they start 2 Namahatta centers. That is, this whole concept was started by him, which Jaipataka Maharaj has so nicely built on, and it's called the Bhakti Vruksha preaching within ISKCON. But the origin of that is the Namahatta preaching, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur himself had sown the seeds for. And he himself used to actively go to these Namahatta centers, and he also used to take part in preaching and teaching the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So his mercy reached far beyond the geographical boundaries of India, and this was in 1896. So he had published some literatures in English, Krishna consciousness in English, some books he had published in English, and he wanted that mercy to spread to the West as well. So in 1896, for the first time, his books left the shores of India, and they were sent to the library. So there is, it was sent to the library of the Royal Asiatic Society in London, also the library of the McGill University in Canada, and other respectable institutions all over the world. But these were the two places, main places, where his books were sent. And once Prabhupada was asked, it's a historical coincidence that in 1896, for the first time, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's English books left the shores of India, and in that same year, Srila Prabhupada was also born. So one of Prabhupada's disciples was once asking that if Bhaktivinoda Thakur could write so much in English and he was so proficient in English, why didn't he go to the West and preach as well? He sent his books to the West and he could have preached, isn't it? That disciple was asking Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada very humbly replied. He said that Bhaktivinoda Thakur and my Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, both were so spiritually capable, like empowered, that they could have delivered the whole world in no time. They wanted to leave some service for this insignificant jiva, and that is why they left this service for me to do. So that was Srila Prabhupada's mood when he used to speak about Bhaktivinoda Thakur and Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, year 1908, when he was 70 years old, he actually accepted the external vesh of a Babaji. So he took Babaji vesh and he spent the remainder of his life chanting the holy names in Surabhi Kunj, in Godruma Dweep, the retirement home that he had built for himself. And there he used to have so many discourses on Nectar of Devotion and all the other books which he himself had written. And Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, even though Bhaktivinoda Thakur considered him as his Siksha Guru, he used to, you know, go and listen to Bhaktivinoda Thakur's discourses as well. And also Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, whom then he inspired his son to take initiation from Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. They used to go and listen to his discourses. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, during his life, he had made three predictions. The first prediction was that a personality will very soon appear. He writes, and he will travel all over the world to spread the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. So that was the first prediction which Bhaktivinoda Thakur had made at that time, during his time. The second prediction which Bhaktivinoda Thakur had made was that very soon the chanting of Harinam Sankirtan will be spread all over the world. People from America, England, France, Germany, Russia will take up kartals and mridanga, and they will chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra in every street in their towns. And we see that second prediction has also come true because of Srila Prabhupada's mercy. And the third prediction he made was that fair-skinned foreigners will come to Sri Mayapur Dham and they will join with the Bengali Vaishnavas to chant Jai Sachinandan, Jai Sachinandan. This was his third prediction, and that has also come true because of Srila Prabhupada's mercy. So we know Srila Prabhupada has made a house in which everyone, the whole world, can live. And we see in Mayapur today, like even all over the world, even here we can see in Melbourne Mahaprabhu Mandir, but we see, you know, in line with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prediction, in Mayapur we have, you know, devotees from all countries who have settled down over there. Like there's a whole Russian conglomerate who settled down there, and devotees from all over the world have settled down, and they and all the Bengali Vaishnavas so nicely serve together and chant the holy names together. And these were the three predictions which Bhaktivinoda Thakur had made at that time about Srila Prabhupada. So in 1914, on June 23rd, just before noon, at Jagannath Puri, Bhaktivinoda Thakur disappeared from this world. And it coincided with the disappearance day of Gadadhar Pandit as well. So it was a very auspicious day when Bhaktivinoda Thakur left this world. His transcendental remains were then taken from Orissa back to his beloved Godruma Dweep, the Swananda Surabhi Kunj that he had established, the land of Lord Chaitanya and his own eternal pastimes. And his samadhi was created over there. So this was a little bit about the life of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And in Krishna Leela, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is actually Kamala Manjari. So that was his eternal position in Krishna Leela. He was one of the Manjaris. And a little bit about his life. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a grahastha. And he was a grahastha of very high standard. So he used to follow this is something very inspiring for especially grahasthas like us to learn from Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life. So he had almost 10 or 11 children. But he has said, Bhaktivinoda Thakur has said that, you know, one can have hundreds of children if you can make all of them into devotees. So, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur had said that when I come home in the evening and I see my family engaged in aarti and worshipping and chanting the holy names of the Lord, I feel I have come to Golok Vrindavan. So that is how his family was also so conducive and, you know, practicing Krishna consciousness. But more speaking about his own life, Bhaktivinoda Thakur was an extremely efficient time manager. Like, you know, about grahasthas, most of us, I know, like speaking of myself, we all struggle with time management. You know, balancing our material duties, our jobs, our, you know, duties towards our children, our spiritual life, temple services. Sometimes it becomes a big struggle for all of us to juggle all this and our own sadhana, reading, hearing, chanting. It's a very big balancing act for grahastha especially. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, just, you know, speaking about his daily schedule. So every day Bhaktivinoda Thakur, from 8 p.m. to 2 p.m., he would rest. That was his resting time. 2 hours he would rest. And then from 10 p.m. to 4 a.m., he would sit and write books. So all these, he has written 150 books during his lifetime. And he's also written so many songs. In our Vaishnava songbooks, we know there are so many songs which are by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, including the famous Gora Chandera Arti. So he's written so many songs, and he's written so many books in Sanskrit, Bengali, English, all three languages he has written books in. So 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. he used to sit and write. And then from 4 to 4:30 he would again take half an hour rest. And then 4:30 to 7 he would sit and chant his japa. And for, you know, devotees who have visited Bhaktivinoda Thakur's house in Godruma, I don't know if you all have climbed that little staircase. There's a very small room which has no windows. In that room, Bhaktivinoda Thakur used to sit and chant his japa, intense japa. And, you know, it's already dark, that room, but he would even put a black cloth over his head and he would chant intense japa during that time, between 4:30 and 7. Then 7 to 7:30, he would do his correspondence, like, you know, responding to letters, whatever, because he was the magistrate, so whatever letters and all that would come. And then 7:30 to 9:30 he would sit and study shastras. So 10 p.m. to 4 a.m. he would write Shastras, but then it was his own time to study Shastras. So he would read scriptures between 7:30 and 9:30. Then 9:30 to 10 o'clock, he would take a bath, have prasadam, you know, all his, you know, physical needs he would satisfy during 9:30 to 10. And for prasadam also, every time he would have half liter milk, some fruits and two chapatis. That was his prasadam. Very simple diet he used to follow. Then 10 to 1 o'clock, he would go to court to do his court duties. And we've heard this before. Bhaktivinoda Thakur could settle court cases which somebody would take days and days. He could quickly, you know, give judgments in half an hour. He was so efficient at his work. So some, you know, people would take normally 4 days to do some work, and that he could finish off in 2-3 hours. So that is how he used to work, and that is why that train line was made by the government for him. So 10 to 1, he would attend to court duties, and then 1 to 2, he would come back home and he would rest at home, have his lunch or whatever. And then again, 2 to 5, he would go back to attend to his court duties. And then 5 to 7 p.m., he would sit and translate Sanskrit Shastras into Bengali. Because he was living in Nadia, he wanted all the Sanskrit literatures to also reach the local people. So he would sit down and do just translation at that time, Bengali to Sanskrit translation. That was 5 to 7 p.m. And then 7 to 8 p.m., he would take bath, again have his dinner prasadam. So again looking after his physical needs. And again it was half liter milk, rice and two chapatis. That was his diet. And then 8 to 10 p.m. he would rest. Again, 10 to p.m. to 4 p.m. he would write. So this was his daily schedule, Bhaktivinoda Thakur's daily schedule. And we see Prabhupada was basing his life on Bhaktivinoda Thakur's life model. Like Prabhupada would also throughout the night would sit and write. Prabhupada would also hardly sleep 2-3 hours in a day. So we are so fortunate that we are in this exalted and, you know, exalted Gaudiya Vaishnava lineage where we have such exemplary people who have come in our lineage like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, our own Srila Prabhupada. And we have so much to learn from all these exalted Vaishnavas who have come and imbibe the mood of these Vaishnavas. And it is said on the appearance day or the disappearance day of Vaishnavas, they are very merciful. And therefore, you know, let's, you know, take this time to pray to Bhaktivinoda Thakur that we can imbibe a little bit of his teachings and his mood, which can transform our hearts and make us as sincere and dedicated like he was in during his lifetime. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions, comments, corrections? Thank you. Yes, Krishna.
Thank you very much for a wonderful class. You did a good research and type it out on the computer.
Thank you, Prabhu.
As you said, he had a closet in his house and he used to do intense chanting.
Yeah. Yes, Prabhuji. Thank you. Krishna?
How many books did you mention in the Bhagavad Gita?
150 books.
In the verse it is written that the Goswamis were headed by Srila Rupa Goswami, but Rupa Goswami is Gurudev Sanatana Goswami. Then why are the six Goswamis headed by Rupa?
Very nice question. So he's asking that it is said that in the translation that the six Goswamis were headed by Rupa Goswami. So Krishna is asking that Sanatan Goswami was the elder brother, you're saying? Guru of Rupa Goswami. So why is it that Rupa Goswami used to head and not Sanatan Goswami? Very nice question. So what I have heard and read is that Rupa Goswami was a very exalted Vaishnava, and Sanatan Goswami was the elder brother of Rupa Goswami. But realizing Rupa Goswami's exalted qualities, because he was a very, very elevated, empowered personality in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. So realizing his, and that doesn't mean Sanatan Goswami wasn't like that, but realizing his exalted qualities, Sanatan Goswami himself had declared that Rupa Goswami is the head of all the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So you know Nanda Maharaj, Krishna's father? He was not the eldest brother, but even, you know, Nanda Maharaj's elder brothers, because Nanda Maharaj had such good qualities, they had made Nanda Maharaj the king of Vrindavan. They themselves did not become the king of Vrindavan, even though they were elder to Nanda Maharaj. So in the same way, even though Sunatan Goswami was guru and elder to Rupa Goswami, he wanted Rupa Goswami to head all the Vaishnavas, mainly because of his good qualities. Okay? Sorry, Mataji? I listened to a lecture. My Prabhuji also helped me prepare. He also got some facts. There's so much literature, Mataji, on the internet, like on some Vaishnava websites. Yeah, some Vaishnava websites. And many books have been written about Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So from the books also, online books. And also some lectures that I heard. That's what I saw, Mataji, in one of the books, that it was the medical officer who cut off all his hair.
I think it was the police officer. Medical officer advised him, and the police officer cut the hair.
Maybe I could be corrected, yeah. Okay. But he was definitely aware that there is some power in the hair. That's what was written, Mataji. Okay, I stand corrected. Yes, Prabhuji.
Is there any mention of how many rounds he used to chant, or after retiring, did he like to only bhajan, or any information about that?
So this schedule which was there, which it was during his work time, but after that he was dedicating most of his time reading and chanting. But I haven't come across the exact number of rounds. It's not mentioned, Prabhuji. Does anybody else know? I am not aware, Prabhuji. Yes, Prabhuji. Sorry, I can't hear you, Prabhuji. I haven't read so many of his songs like now when I was preparing for the class, but I know, I think even Gopinath song has been written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and even Shuddha Bhakta Charana Reno, I think that has also been written by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. So I was reading a lecture where the description was given, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur was glorifying the exalted position of Vaishnavas. So like you are saying, his humility, where he's saying that our only shelter is the dust of the feet of a devotee, even though he himself was such an exalted devotee. And in many of his songs, he used to say that, I'm happy to be born even as a worm or a fly in a devotee's house, but give me Vaishnava association. So, and you know, sometimes when we also tell others, especially again speaking of myself, I'm so fallen, I'm just like a worm, but I actually don't mean that when we say these statements, because sometimes someone says something, our ego gets so much affected. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur and these exalted personalities, when they write that I'm happy to be born as a worm or as a fly in some devotee's house, they actually mean it. It's actually coming from the core of their heart, their humble core, humility core of their heart. So especially his song Shuddha Bhakta Charana Reno is very touching, because he says that's our only hope, taking shelter of the lotus feet of devotees. So that is one of my own favorite songs.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur also has connection with Narottam Das.
Yes, yes, very true. Any other questions? Or?
He's also called the seventh Goswami.
Yeah.
Yes, Rauji. We mentioned that in the beginning of the class. Yes, Rauji.
What do you mean by Goswami?
So, Prabhuji, the word go has different meanings. One of the, like, go also means cow, but one of the meanings of go is senses. And when we say Goswami, so there are two terminologies, Godas and Goswami. So Godas is people in the material world practicing devotees. We are actually so much servant of our own senses. Our senses tell us, I say, let's watch something. Ears say, I want to hear something. Tongue always wants to, you know, keep eating nice things. Skin wants like nice, you know, clothes and all that to wear. So our senses keep pulling us in different directions, like untamed horses. And when we give in to these senses, then the term is called as Godas. But when we talk about the Goswamis, it is, Swami means master. So these are personalities who have mastered their senses. So their senses don't rule them. Their senses are not telling them, you know, take me here and there. And even if their senses tell them, they are able to actually subdue their senses because they have mastery over their senses. So that is one of the meaning. The literal meaning of Goswami is a person who has been able to master their senses. But speaking in a more broader sense, Goswami means someone who has, you know, realized the teachings of the Lord Krishna and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and who is actually utilizing their life after realizing the teachings to spread the teachings of these personalities all over the world. So that is also, in the broader text, when we broaden the definition of Goswami, it includes that as well. So the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, whose picture is there, they had not only realized the teachings of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Krishna, but they were following the instructions of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in uncovering all the holy places of Vrindavan, writing so much literature, preaching to the general masses. So that is, so Goswamis, because if you see even, you know, many Siddhas, like for example, people who have, you know, do Ashtanga Yoga and who have lots of control over their, you know, do yogic postures and all that, they might also have control over their senses. They might not be giving in easily to their senses. But that is the base definition of Goswami. But when we say Goswami, we mean all these things as well. If there's no more questions, we'll end the class here. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Bhakti Vinod Thakur ki, Jai.